Good morning, everybody. Good morning, good morning. Come on in and find some seats. You know, it's such a beautiful day, and nobody ever applauds the day. I'd just like to hear a round of applause for the wonderful weather that we're having. Excellent. So there's a few announcements. I cut it down from 400, so bear with me. Today's designated collection will be for Maquonago Food Pantry. Loose bills, coins, and any check with the Maquonago Food Pantry on the memo line will go to Maquonago Food Pantry. If you have trouble spelling Maquonago, see me after the service. Church auction. Here we go. Fundraising committee is thrilled to announce that our church auction was a huge success. Thanks to all of you who donated items and to all of you who made bids. We raised close to $13,000 for our church budget. So, Kirsten Sandin will be in the social hall after Sunday service, so that's what's about to happen here, with all the paperwork. If you donated an item, please pick up the bidding form with all the winning bidders. If you bid on items, pick up your invoice with the items you've won and amount you owe. You can pay with a check, cash, or online, and you don't have to write Maquonago on those. Next announcement, this is in the order of service, but there is a group discussion meeting called the Conversation Project. There will be a preliminary discussion on November 13th, that's next Sunday. You do not have to have read the book to come to the preliminary discussion. There will be a book discussion then on December 11th. The book is by Atul, and I've misspelled his name, Gawande. And it is called Being Mortal, Medicine and What Matters in the End. And on the 13th, there will also be a special speaker, a Dr. Stephanie Gilbertson-White, who may or may not be related to... Yeah, it's weird. It's like she's got a similar name to people here in our own community. Next announcement, the Social Justice Committee is encouraging everyone to write letters to the representatives and the media regarding the worsening economic inequality in the United States. We will have a table set up in the social hall after service each Sunday in November, so that's starting today, and you can write letters there or take home handouts with talking points and addresses to write your letters later. You can talk to Phil Smith for more details. Again, there will be a table in the social hall with all the information you need to know who you're going to write to and some talking points, I'm sure, as well. Amy has an announcement.
Sure, some of you may have noticed Tuesday is Election Day. Shocking, isn't it? And some of you may have noticed this has been a rather hotly contested election with a lot of painful feeling on both sides. Because of that, next Wednesday, I will be here at church from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. in the evening, no matter which way the election goes, no matter who wins. This is not about party. This is if you need somewhere to go after that election to talk about how you're feeling about that election, no matter who wins. I will be here on Wednesday night. I'll have some coffee made. If you need somewhere to go and cuss, scream, rejoice, or just take a deep breath and say, thank God it's over. The church will be open on Wednesday night, 6 to 8.
And for those of you who didn't know, the election is actually Tuesday, so that's when you vote. Last announcement. Today's order of service, as always, includes announcements of other upcoming church activities, and we look forward to everyone joining in, so put yourself forward. To stay current on services, events, and activities, check out our webpage at lcuuc.org, like and follow us on Facebook. So please take a moment at this point to silence all of your electronics that you may have with you here today. Thank you.
Thank you.
some things speak to us beyond words and reach us in places where our logic and our intellect just don't go. Direct experience is one of our six sources, and today we're going to explore how music can reach us in deep and transformative ways and be a source of religion. So come and let us worship here together. Please take just a moment to say hi or to introduce yourself to the people nearest you.
We light this chalice, and we say, come sit by the fire, share your songs. May they sound in our hearts and minds and allow us to know one another a little better. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our opening hymn, number 361, Enter, Rejoice, and Come In. Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we work to bring a message of hope and grace to an imperfect world. My name is DJ Def Dr. Funky Fackler, also known as Paul. I admit I'm still working on the hip-hop name. And I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. No matter who you are or where you have come from, you are welcome here. Whether you were raised on Billie Holiday, Dr. Demento, and Motown, or Iggy Pop, Frank Sinatra, and Death Cab for Cutie, we welcome you. Whether you love acapella, ambient, alternative, barbershop, beat, bebop, blues, bluegrass, boogaloo, bossa nova, bubblegum, cabaret, calypso, Celtic, cha-cha-cha, garage, Gregorian chant, gospel, grunge, hip-hop, honky-tonk, indie, jazz, jungle, kabuki, kirtan, klezmer, lo-fi, lounge, madrigal, mariachi, mazurka, nerdcore, new age, new wave, oi! Opera, reggae, riot girl, R&B, rock, rockabilly, rococo, salsa, samba, shoegaze, ska, soul, spiritual, surf, wonky, zoom it, yodeling, oh, I sipped a line, swing, trek, techno, trance, trip-hop, twee, underground, urban cowboy, vaudeville, vocal, waltz, wonky, zoomy, yodeling, zook, or zydeco, or a good long silence. We welcome you. No matter what your sound is, you are welcome here. As a UUA-recognized welcoming congregation, we welcome and affirm all people, regardless of their musical affiliations, and no matter who they love or what pronouns they use. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in our social hall after the service, and while you're there, find out more about our church. We are glad that you have chosen to be here today to celebrate and worship with us.
One of the ways that we try to help our community is by contributing to the food pantries. We do that financially. We're doing the collection this week from a Quantico food pantry. We also collect non-perishable food items, which we donate each month. So if you brought food items to share, please bring them forward or ask a child to bring them forward for you. And I invite the children to stay up front and enjoy a story with Paul.
Hey, good morning. So today's story is called Ella Fitzgerald. Do any of you know who Ella Fitzgerald is? So there is some knowledge of Ella Fitzgerald. Okay, you can sit if you want. I'm going to stand up. I've got on my winter growth, both around my belly and my hair, face, because mammals do that so that they can quietly, as soon as it snows, just go to sleep until the sun comes back. Today's story, Ella Fitzgerald, by Andrea Davis Pinkney and Brian Pinkney. They're a husband and wife team. I love their art. So if you like this book and so on, you want to see the pictures closer, go check it out from your library. They've got a lot of different books that they've written. Now, this story is told by Scat Cat, so I'm going to introduce myself. You may think I look like any other cat, but baby, I'm in a class all by myself. Scat Cat's my name, Scat Cat Monroe. A name I've earned. Got my name from knowing Ella. Ella Fitzgerald, the queen of scat. What's scat, you ask? Scat's the sound that don't hold back. Ella's sound, that was scat. Singing so supreme, music's velvet ribbon dream. Let me tell you Ella's story. I watched Ella go from a small town girl to the first lady of song, to a vocal virtuoso, bar none. Next page. The child's name was Ella. She was a big-boned girl with dreams of becoming a dancer. But there weren't many dance schools in Yonkers, New York, the little city where Ella and her mother Tempe lived. Ella had her heart set on pretty stepping her way to fame, but she didn't need a dance school to do it. She taught herself to tap dance. Determination was her teacher. The sidewalk was her stage. Imagination was her spotlight. When Ella's neighbors saw her go, they told Ella to strut her stuff in Harlem. Take her hoofing to New York, the big city where dreams really do come true. Next page. On the night of November 21st, 1934, where were you guys on November 21st, 1934? You know where you were? You didn't exist yet. That's different. So, not dead, non-existent. I didn't either. So 1934, November 21st, Ella entered a talent contest at the Apollo Theater. She was 17. But as soon as Ella saw the footlight, her feet failed her. She stood front and center, knees knocking, teeth clacking. Luckily, Ella was thinking on her toes. She refused to be booed back to Yonkers, so she started to sing. At first, her voice came quiet as a whisper, a measly little hiss, soft as a cricket. But when the band joined in, Ella rolled out a tune sweet enough to bake. She won the contest straight up, kicked her dance dreams to the curb, and pinned all her hopes on becoming a singer. Next page. Soon Ella had audiences eating out of her hand. In 1935, the Harlem Opera House signed her as a featured singer. One night, Bardu Ali, the master of ceremonies for the Chick Webb Orchestra, saw Ella perform. That's when Bardu knew that Chick needed Ella, and that Ella needed Chick, that the two of them could make beautiful music together. But Chick was a finicky bird, a perfectionist. He was a jazz drummer who liked his music hot. Swing music was Chick's style, cut-the-rug rhythms that put the pulse on a party. He believed folks came to hear the instruments in his band, not some singer. What Chick didn't know was that Ella's voice was its own instrument. Next page. Chick agreed to give Ella a chance. He told her she could sing with his orchestra at a college dance the next night at Yale University, the Ivy League, where getting loose don't always come easy. Chick told Ella that if she could work that college crowd, she could join his band. So Ella went to Yale, and man, once Ella started to sing, she had them Yalies jamming. That night, Chick welcomed Ella into his band. He took her under his wing, and the two of them flew to the Savoy Ballroom, the hippest place in Harlem. Next page. The Chick Webb Orchestra had a regular gig at the Savoy. The place was crammed full of folks who'd come to shake their tails to the orchestra's sound. Have any of you know how to shake your tails? Shake your tails? No? Yeah, no tail. Evolutionary problems. It was Chick's drumming that put people onto the dance floor. It was Ella's singing that kept them there. After Ella sang, she stepped down from the stage and danced with her fans. Ella let them know she was one of them. She showed them she could kangaroo, too. She stomped at the Savoy like any other paying customer. Any of you know the kangaroo? The Q-tip? No? Okay. Next page. Their dance moves. Ella made it her business to learn all she could from Chick. Chick showed Ella the right way to deliver a song. He taught her to shade the high notes and light the lows, to grab hold of a tune, to wrap her voice around each melody. When Chick and Ella performed together, they were grits and gravy. They brought out the best in each other. People called it chemistry. I called it musical magic. Next page. On May 11, 1937, the Chick Webb Orchestra took on the Benny Goodman Orchestra in the Savoy's Battle of the Bands. One band tried to outplay the other till the crowd, with their applause, named the winner. Benny Goodman was called the King of Swing. He played the clarinet. But Benny didn't have Ella. Benny set the contest in motion. His band started with a song called Peckin'. They made the place swing, no doubt. Then Chick's band took their turn. When Chick's band played Harlem Congo, the crowd got hotter than bootleg Tabasco. That's because Ella set Harlem Congo on fire. Her voice was quick-fried rhythm with a brassy satin twist. She sang like tomorrow wasn't ever going to come. 4,000 people filled the Savoy Ballroom that night. The contest lasted 5 hours, and when it was done, everybody knew who was boss. Next page. The Savoy was Ella's stepping stone. Thanks to nightly radio broadcasts from the club, Ella was the name sitting pretty on everybody's lips. Nightclub owners had to wait in line to book the band. Some of them had never had a black singer perform at their clubs. Ella's popularity showed them that a true star has no color, it just shines. Next page. Ella didn't shy back from any kind of music. When bebop became hotter than swing and music lovers turned to Bird and Dizzy, Ella took her place on the bebop bandwagon. Dizzy Gillespie was bebop's main man. He turned jazz on its head. With his trumpet, he could blow notes into backflips. He invited Ella to give bebop a try, to improvise to the ping-pong rhythms that gave bebop its sound. Next page. Ella went along for Dizzy's ride. One night, when the two of them started to jam, Ella made bebop her own. For Ella, scat singing drove bebop home. Ella used her voice in the same way Dizzy used the notes he made with his horn. Next page. On September 29, 1947, Ella and Dizzy headlined a sold-out performance at Carnegie Hall. They brought bebop to a high and mighty concert stage. Dizzy's trumpet chirped. It zipped. It sputtered in double tempo time. Ella's singing hung fast to Dizzy's rhythm. Man, those two were making up music in the moment. It was invention. It was frolic. It was cooler than cool. Ella put scat on the map. When she and Dizzy threw down the skippity-hop-doo-dee-bop, every soul in the place slipped into the jam. Next page. Ella soon had fans who loved all kinds of music. They came to call Ella by many names, the Queen of Scat, the First Lady of Song, a vocal virtuoso. That's the end. So thanks for listening to my story. And can we have our lantern bearer? Thank you. Yeah, so.
There you go. May the light and love of our lantern lead you today and every day. And if you would follow him, and if you all would help me sing the children out, the song is called Shall Go Out, and the words are in your order of service. What makes our church a church is not the building or the minister or these Sunday services, but the people who are here. And from time to time this year, we're going to have people from the congregation share just a little bit about their journey with us during a service. Today, we'll be hearing from member Gus Santo. So, Gus, come on up. Come on down.
I chose to belong to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church because the LCUUC hasn't settled into a cozy routine of predictable services and non-committal social justice programs. I have tried other churches that just don't seem to fit. I thought they made me look fat. A congregation is not guaranteed a long life just because the members pursue their own spiritual growth while paying their fair share of the financial obligations of their church. A congregation will eventually collapse, even if all of its members meditate or pray every day, recycle every little bit of waste they make, minimizing their carbon footprint, and memorize their spiritual principles in order to recite to another, at a moment's notice, the theological foundations and meaningful rituals of their religion. A congregation will only grow without any guarantees of success if the members dedicate themselves to each other in the hard work of change, supporting one another in the unpleasant task of active listening, while admitting that we might be wrong when we would rather stubbornly promote our own views, and by concentrating on giving when receiving is so much more profitable. Growth comes from taking risks and not playing it safe. That is why I love this congregation. The LCUUC is a congregation of people who listen before they speak most of the time and don't take things for granted. Because life is short, we focus on what we can do now to bring more peace into the world, more understanding, and more love, always cognizant of the other person's priority over our status quo. We have learned not to be smug within our own imagined goodness, but rather to see the genuine goodness in the need of the other person, which commands our attention. This is why we of the LCUUC must never become content with our own spiritual growth, because spirituality which is self-centered is a corrupt spirituality. The source of goodness, on the other hand, is the living face of the other, gaunt with hunger, scarred by abuse, and drawn with despair. And even if we know that our resources are limited to respond to this hunger, this abuse, and this despair, we also know that to turn away from the face of the other is to alienate ourselves from each other and within our own singular hearts. Therefore, let us all renew our dedication to the forward movement of the LCUUC by pushing each other gently to regard goodness not in ourselves, but in the face of the other person.
Thank you so much, Gus. May our stories and our words always be a blessing to one another and to our whole community. Thank you. A genie appeared at a UU church and told the minister, "In return for your unselfish and exemplary behavior, I will reward you with your choice of infinite wealth, wisdom, or beauty." "Give me infinite wisdom," declared the minister without hesitating for a second. "Done," said the genie before disappearing in a puff of smoke. All heads in the congregation turned toward the minister, who was now surrounded by a halo of white light. "Well," said a congregant, "go ahead, say something brilliant." The minister stood and with the poise of Socrates said, "Wow, I should have taken the money." Since I too went with brilliance and looks instead of wealth, this morning's collection and offering will now be given and received. Please remember that today's designated collection is for the Maquonago Food Pantry, and write that on the memo line of your check if you wanted to go to them. Any loose bills and coins and any check with their name on it in the memo line will go to Maquonago. Thank you so much for these gifts and for everything that you all do for the life and the work of this community. One of the reasons that we come together in community is so that we can laugh and cry together. Here we do that several ways. If you don't like to speak in front of people before the service, you can always come up to the candle table and silently light a candle. But during the service, we speak aloud, and our worship associate lights our candles for us. So would anyone who has a joy or a concern to share, please raise your hand. One of the ushers will bring you a microphone. Please make sure you hold the microphone up to your mouth and speak clearly.
Hi, I'm Diane. My third great-grandchild was born. Little girl, Grace. Oh. She's beautiful, 8 pounds, 12 ounces, mom and child doing well.
Hi, I'm Carlin Wagner. Could you please light a candle for 3 concerns? One was my father passed last month. He was 89. And for my mother, who is left behind now, you know, dealing with no longer having a husband after 64 years and transitioning and to that new lifestyle. And then my nephew, who is being discharged from the Marines this month with injuries from a helicopter crash and PTSD.
I'd like to light a candle of joy that my husband Brian has made it through his hip surgery, his emergency visit with the lovely folks at Oconomowoc Memorial, and is here today to heckle me at intervals.
I am Barb, a candle of joy for another week of family promise at our church and the blessings that come from everyone who shares that project. But I also want to light a candle of concern because the last couple of times we've hosted family promise, it's become more difficult to get people to volunteer. And this is a beautiful program, and I hope that we can look in our hearts and find time and energy to join it. Thanks.
My name is Esther, and today after the service is over with, we're going to Wanakee, Wisconsin, which is near Madison, to help my brother celebrate his 80th birthday. So, my brother Herb.
And this is Jim. I'd like to light a candle of joy that Debbie Reiners has come back to join us for a day. It is just wonderful to see her.
We light our last candle today for all of those joys and all of those sadnesses which touch our hearts deeply, but which we've not spoken aloud here today.
Our first reading is by Charlotte Erickson. So this is for us. This is for us who sing, write, dance, act, study, run, and love. And this is for doing it even if no one will ever know, because the beauty is in the act of doing it, not what it can lead to. This is for the times I lose myself while writing, singing, playing, and no one is around and they will never know. But I will forever remember. And that shines brighter than any praise or fame or glory I will ever have. And this is for you who write or play or read or sing by yourself with the light off and door closed when the world is asleep and the stars are aligned. And maybe no one will ever hear it or read your words or know your thoughts, but it doesn't make it less glorious. It makes it ethereal, mysterious, infinite, for it belongs to you and whatever God or spirit you believe in, and only you can decide how much it meant and means and will forever mean. And other people will experience it too, through you, through your spirit, through the way you talk, through the way you walk and love and laugh and care. And I never meant to write this long, but what I want to say is, don't try to present your art by making other people read or hear or see or touch it. Make them feel it. Wear your art like your heart on your sleeve and keep it alive by making people feel a little better, feel a little lighter. Create art in order for yourself to become yourself. Let your very identity be your book. Let the way people say your name sound like the sweetest melody. So go, create, take photographs in the wood, run alone in the rain and sing your heart out high up on a mountain where no one will ever hear, and your very existence will be the most hypnotizing scar. Make your life be your art, and you will never be forgotten. Here ends the first reading.
Please join me in a silent moment of meditation or the spirit of prayer. Quite a few of you in this room over the years have heard the Simon and Garfunkel song, The Sound of Silence. Today we're going to hear another version of that song, done by a group called Disturbed, that I never would have expected to cover folk music. We're going to see the video also. The original version invited you to experience it in one way: to hear the words, to think about them. See if this version pulls you into that song differently. And if you've never heard the original, Google it tonight, and you'll be approaching this from the other direction, but check it out tonight. It's Simon and Garfunkel. See what you think. One song, two completely disparate interpretations and emotional approaches. See what you think. Go ahead and hit it, John.
Sound of silence.
Our second reading is by Lawrence Rademachers. This is a profound mystery which I cannot begin to ponder. Perhaps you can help. Think of it. Technically speaking, music is just a collection of sounds interspersed by silence. But every human knows of pieces of music that really touch him or her emotionally. These emotions can be very strong and transport you to another place. How is it possible that a mere collection of sounds gets associated in our brain with memories, experiences, emotions, stories, images, feelings? Why can we even cry when hearing a particular piece of music, or even a fleeting, short succession of notes? It's totally bizarre. I don't understand. It makes no sense as far as I can see. Sense? No, because apparently there's no utilitarian or economic value to music. Apparently there's no biological or evolutionary advantage. We are hunters and gatherers. With some brutally uttered noises, we should get by well while hunting mammoths and elephants. In any case, how can we ever explain the fact that music touches us and generates feelings that can touch our entire body and make us shiver? Here ends the second reading. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing hymn number 114, Forward Through the Ages.
So when we talk about our first source of all the sources that we draw from as UUs, we're talking about the direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces that create and uphold life. And so a lot of times when we're talking about this, the first place that people's minds go is to experiences right out of Walden. They're thinking going out in nature, going out by a pond, going out alone, going out and being in a field. Experiences that would have made complete sense to Thoreau or Ralph Waldo Emerson. And that's fine, and that's very true. We hear about the beauty and grandeur of nature or the perfect simplicity of a sunrise, and we can see that. We understand that. We understand exactly how someone would feel the presence of mystery and wonder in the natural world. It makes sense to most of us. But the direct experience I want to talk about today is human-created music. Because we often have a problem thinking of it as a holy experience or a sacred experience in and of itself, not just as something that helps to create a sacred atmosphere. Some music doesn't affect us much. It's all around us. We hear it, we register the sound, we could identify it if someone asked, but come on, the McDonald's jingle, the Barney theme song. You're busy going, I love you, I don't care, what the hell did I just hear? You don't care. It barely registers in one ear and out the other. This type of hearing without any impact at all is called casual listening. You do it 1,000 times a day. The music playing at the grocery store. Something someone is humming. You might know the tune, you just don't care. But how many of you, this is a real question, how many of you have a piece of music in your life that the minute you hear it, you are transported somewhere? Maybe something you sang to your child. It may be something they played at your wedding. Maybe something the day your mom or your dad died. The minute you hear it, you are reliving it. You remember smells and sounds and everything about it. That piece of music in that moment hit something for you. It was an intense experience because something about it and the context of your life in the moment made the experience more than just the casual sound. It wasn't casual at all. And that's the kind of music I want to talk about today. According to the Reverend Sarah Schur, you might know that old joke about where Unitarians go after we die. We don't go to heaven, we go to a book discussion about heaven. UUs have a rather well-deserved reputation as folks who would rather theorize about paradise than experience it. And this often translates into our approach to music, especially in church. We go with the head and not the heart. There's another old joke that asks, why don't you use sing well? It's because we're all reading ahead to see if we agree with the next three lines of the hymn. We don't historically use music the same way as more evangelical churches and some branches of Judaism do. It's just never been a particularly UU thing. We don't use it to deliberately evoke that intense experience. Institutionally, we gradually think about what we're singing or hearing. Our hymns are all pretty academic. They're things to make you think through. A lot of them have had their words changed from their earlier Protestant beginnings because there were things we found unsustainable. We listen to the words to see if we agree. This kind of listening is called perceptive listening. It's what you do in a college class. It's more than casual. It implies some kind of rational relationship to what you're hearing. You're listening to see if you can get information, if you agree with it, if it means something to you. Perceptive listening is analysis. So when I first heard Simon and Garfunkel's Sound of Silence, I was probably 10 or 12. And I remember listening to the words, having to go look up a few of them, having to think about what the ideas meant. I wasn't sure what a neon god was or why a prophet would be yelling anything. Didn't get all of it at that age. So I thought about it, maybe a few hours over the course of a week or two. It seemed kind of important. It was everywhere for a while, and then it was gone, and there were other things on the radio. I would feel comfortable playing it in church. It's a harmless folk song. Don't even register it much anymore. I had a very UU approach to that original song, perceptive listening at its best, which eventually dwindled to casual listening and then to silence. But earlier this year, I was sitting at my desk and my Facebook messenger twanged, and it was a friend who said, "I want you to listen to this song right now. I don't care what you're doing. Stop and listen to this." And she sent me the link to the Disturbed video that we saw, and I watched it. And it was like I was hearing that song for the very first time. It was the combination of the words and the images. The election, which at that time was months away but was still coming. All of the social and political events of this year. And I felt like that song was talking about it all at once, and it was talking to me in a way that spoke to me. And it moved me to chills. It was a moment of sensual listening that bypassed the brain and went straight to the senses. And we call that a peak experience, when something hits you beyond your ability to analyze it. It just smacks you. Dr. Robert Woody said, "The notion of peak experience was first advanced by Abraham Maslow in the 60s and 70s. This is old. This is not new stuff. And it refers to mental states where people have feelings of wonder and enthrallment and ecstasy. This is the condition that underlies our first source. Direct, visceral experience of, rather than more distant thinking about. Something hits you like a hammer. You're not processing it, you're experiencing it. In that moment, a musical experience becomes a religious experience. Not because of the wisdom of the words." We are not talking about analyzing something and learning new information from it. We're not talking about academic experience when we talk about peak experience. This is something much more primal. In 2011, a book came out called The Handbook of Music and Emotion. And a music psychologist, Alf Gabrielsen, reviewed the current research in this area. And he looked at peak experience connected to music, including things like trance states, transcendental and religious experience, and even synesthesia, the condition where the music hits you so hard that you see the notes in your mind's eye, or you smell it, or you feel it physically. Gabrielsen and Alexandra Lamont both noted that these peak experiences with music were influenced by the music itself, the person, the situation, and it's strongest in the presence of other people. And when the music is live, when there is an interaction, is when this happens the hardest. Full sensory stimulation, in other words. Dr. John Whaley said, "Now and then people have exceptional experience with music, peak experiences that leave powerful impressions in their memory. The music absorbs the listener, shuts out everything else, invokes strong emotion, other reactions from purely physical response to experiences of existential and spiritual character. The experience is influenced by various factors and may lead to a new view on music and what it means for well-being, health, and quality of life. For any of you who have ever been to a live concert that is not very, very small, that's a larger venue where you're surrounded by people, stage musicians try hard to create these peak experiences. And you see behavior at concerts in the crowd from typically well-behaved people that you see nowhere else in their lives. And the only thing it compares to is often a religious experience in a crowd of people. So the same type of behavior that you would see in a religious service where there are hands up and there are shouting, doesn't matter if it's Elvis or the Red Hot Chili Peppers, the Beatles, or Lord help us, Justin Bieber. You will see screaming and swaying, arm flailing, sweating, tears, emotion-backed behavior created by the combination. It transcends what it is. That same exact strategy is used by religious movements, the chanting of kirtan, the repetitive music of the Breslover Hasidim of Judaism, the praise songs of the Christian evangelical churches. The idea is to make your mind stop analyzing and to allow emotion and sensory stimulation to create a movement and a moment where there's a sublime loss of the self. This is very, very different from hearing music with friends and talking about how much you liked it, or liking a song because the words match your political or religious perspective, or because it tells you a good story. Folk music, the work of amazing artists like Dylan or Emma's Revolution or Holly Near or Leonard Cohen, John Hyatt, it's based on academic perceptual appreciation. You hear the words, you hear the story, and something in it strikes a chord with you. Country music tells us some kind of story. My dog ran off with my wife and they stole my truck and I wish the truck would come back. Can you tell I'm not a country music fan? But we hear the story and we feel something for it, sympathy or excitement or joy. But this is all perceptual. We're thinking about it. These are great ways of interacting with music. I'm not knocking that. But none of those ways of interacting with music are that perfect, transient, pinnacle moment, that peak experience, that religious experience. You don't get a peak experience through analysis. If you're sitting there thinking about it, taking it apart, this isn't going to happen. You don't have a peak experience through music by sorting through songs that you somehow think are going to be appropriate until one of them hits some button in your soul marked, have a religious experience now. Doesn't work that way. Have you ever had a moment, and again, this is a serious question, where there's a song you like and you think, oh my God, I'm embarrassed to like that song? I've had somebody say to me, you know, I love Amazing Grace with the original words, and I feel like a jerk for liking it because I'm an atheist. Other people who've said, I love Christmas carols with all the original words, or who can't stand the song that I deliberately did right before the sermon. Because in their mind, they keep hearing Onward Christian Soldiers, and it's the only part that feels right to them. And then they say, but God, I'm ashamed of myself. I hate it that I like this. I had a very feminist friend who told me, I love rap music. And I admitted, I have a collection of Little John and the East Side Boys. Not good music, it's foul, bad language, rotten ideas, and it just hits something. Your heart knows what your heart wants. Your life and your journey will decide for you if it's AC/DC, the Barney theme song, Hanson, How Great Thou Art, or the latest song by Jay-Z, or something auto-tuned until you barely recognize it, which will move you from casual listening or academic analysis to some kind of complete sensual immersion in the music. This kind of moment you can be open to, but you can't control it. So what are the benefits of being open to it? Maslow's original research said that an individual in a peak experience will have all the following things happen almost simultaneously. A loss of judgment as to time and space. You're lost in the music. A feeling of being one whole and harmonious self, free of dissociation or inner conflict. Feeling of using all capacities and capabilities at the highest potential, fully functioning. Functioning effortlessly without strain. Feeling completely responsible for perception and behavior, self-determined, single-minded, without inhibition or fear or doubt. Feeling like you could use your spontaneity and expressiveness and naturally flowing behavior, unconstrained by conformity. Feeling a free mind that is flexible and open to creative thought. Complete mindfulness of the present moment without influence of the past or expected future. Now, I don't know about you, but these points, these states of being, are sought across several major religions and meditative styles. Sounds pretty good to me. Now, I have no intention of installing big screens in here and adding a praise band and an hour of praise music to every service so everybody can let out that deep breath that you've been holding. I am suggesting, though, that you take the time to explore the phenomenon of peak experience through music more fully at your leisure. Find music that speaks to your emotions rather than your analytical side. Try it out. Look for music you may have overlooked. Be willing to have the experience, even if the music is something you would rationally discard. You don't have to admit whatever it is you're listening to. Get headphones. Add video if you like. Go see a live performance. Accidental peak experiences have already happened to you through music. Those songs that already take you back to wherever you were when you heard them. But you can choose mindfully to look for more sounds that create those feelings of wonder and enthrallment and ecstasy as a religious practice. Try Spotify online. Find new music, music you've never heard before. Explore. Listen to recordings of ancient chants that you Google randomly, or Mormon Tabernacle Choir recordings, or bagpipes or drums. Look for Tibetan throat singing. Explore as widely as you can. Check out rap. My personal favorite, the Hasidic Rabbi Nachman song, which will be stuck in your head forever and ever and ever. Go to YouTube and look for a band called Shell, S-H-E-L, doing a cover of Metallica's Enter Sandman in beautiful, feminine, high voices. Search for a sublime moment. And let me know what music you find. I'm always looking for a few good tunes to add to my collection. Amen.
Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our closing hymn this week, number 108, My Life Flows On in Endless Song.
Go out in joy, ready to hear and experience the music of the world. Peace, and may it be so.